Good afternoon. I wish I had a good fire joke, but I haven't come up with one. I'd like to talk to you today about measles in New York City in 2008 and the use of an immunization information system in outbreak control activities. By way of overview, I'll first talk about the epidemiology of measles in New York City, and then I'll talk about how we used our immunization information system, or IIS, in outbreak response and control activities. And finally, I'll touch on how the IIS provided some important information to understand why the outbreak may have occurred. So this is the standard epi curve. The lower one is looking at measles in New York City over the last 20 years. Like the rest of the country, we haven't had substantial disease since the early 90s. But I've blown up from 2000 to 2008 to make the point that New York City is never free of measles. We have many travelers, many visitors, so we see importations on a regular basis. And over the last several years, have been averaging about 5 measles cases a year. But 2008 was clearly different. In 2008, we had 29 measles cases. 28 were confirmed, and one was probable. This was the most measles cases we had since 1992. It was a complex outbreak with multiple importations, and I'll get into that in the next slide. There were several generations of local transmission and large numbers of contacts, over 2,000, that were identified and contacted about their exposures. So in this chart below, I have an epi curve of the case, the standard epi curve, which is measles cases over reporting week. And then up above, I've broken them up into distinct groups that we saw occurring over the course of the year. There were what I would call our sporadic cases, which were consistent with what we usually see year to year. The majority of these were direct importations. So those that are hatched are direct cases from international travel. In addition, we had 3 clusters of disease that were separated in time, but also in space. While all these clusters occurred in the borough of Brooklyn, they occurred in different neighborhoods. The first cluster, the index case, was not a traveler, but attended a wedding in which we knew there were many guests from places, including Israel. There was some rumors that there was a sick child there that returned to Israel the next day. We were never able to confirm that. The second cluster occurred in a different part of Brooklyn. There were 2 adults that traveled to Belgium and upon return came down with measles, and there was some transmission locally. The third cluster occurred in a part of Brooklyn called Borough Park, similar, the same general area as this initial cluster. The index case, or cases in this case, weren't travelers. We couldn't identify any clear links between this community and this community. What we do know is that these cases started occurring about 1 week after the Jewish holiday of Purim, which is a time when a lot of people gather together. And all these cases occurred in the Orthodox Jewish community in Borough Park. The age distribution of our cases is as follows. As you see, about a third of our cases were in adults. Among the children, the largest proportion of cases were in those 12 to 15 months of age, with children over 15 months of age being in the minority. To look at the pediatric cases in more detail, so 2/3 of our cases were children, 42% were 12 to 15 months of age, 6 of those 8 were children 14 and 15 months of age. Of the 4 cases that were over 15 months of age, the reasons for non-vaccination were 1 personal belief exemption, or 1 personal belief, although we don't allow personal belief exemptions in our schools. 2 were missed opportunities for vaccination. And the final, the mother couldn't give us a reason why the child wasn't vaccinated. We had 2 children hospitalized for pneumonia who recovered completely, and 1 possible nosocomial transmission from an adult to a child in a provider's office. Among the adult cases, they ranged from 20 to 41 years of age. All of our imported cases were in adults, five of the 10. They were from Israel, Belgium, as well as Italy. Getting immunization status on the adults was difficult. 5 reported no previous vaccination, although no one could give a specific reason why they weren't vaccinated. 4 reported unknown vaccination status. And we had one adult who had 2 well-documented measles vaccinations. Although they were 20 years earlier, this individual was IgM positive and transmitted disease to his child. In terms of the molecular epi, we were able to get viral testing on 38% of our cases, of which 54% were positive by PCR or culture. All were D4 genotype, which was known to be circulating in Belgium, UK, and Israel at that time. So it wasn't particularly informative in terms of differentiating the different clusters. With respect to the geography, 90% of our cases occurred in Brooklyn, which is Kings County. The 2000 population census for Brooklyn is 3.5 million people, which is almost half of the population of New York, and there's a birth cohort of 40,000 in Brooklyn every year. 79% of our pediatric cases occurred in Borough Park, which is highlighted in red. It makes up 4 zip codes. Its census population in 2000 was 185,000, over 50,000 people per square mile, a very densely populated area, and a birth cohort of approximately 5,000 a year. In terms of our outbreak response, we issued alerts through the medical community, through our health alert network. We did press releases and communicated with TV, radio, and print media. We outreached to community and religious leaders. We distributed flyers in Borough Park as we began to see that more as the problem area. We used school immunization compliance information to review public and private school immunization coverage to make sure that there weren't school-aged children at risk. And finally, and I will speak in greater detail about using our immunization information system to target interventions. By way of background, New York City's IIS is called the Citywide Immunization Registry, or CIR. It was initiated in 1997. It's populated by vital records, and we have approximately 125,000 births per year. There's over 1,900 providers that report into the CIR, and approximately 70% of our pediatric population are VFC eligible. 96% of VFC doses distributed are currently accounted for by the CIR. So there were several steps in our response. The first was that we used the IIS to generate a list of all the providers or practices within 7 zip codes in Brooklyn that we were concerned about. It was centered around Borough Park, although initially we were seeing cases further out. We assessed immunization coverage of the children of those practices, looking at children 24 to 48 months of age, and providers who had large numbers, and it was sort of an arbitrary cutoff, of unvaccinated children were directly contacted by phone. There were 10 practices we reached out to, discussed the outbreak, and encouraged them to recall those children who were not up to date to bring them up to date for MMR vaccination. Our second step, as cases began to really coalesce in Borough Park, was to again generate a list, which was easy to do through the IIS, of all the practices in that community, in those 4 zip codes, and contact each one of the practices directly by one of our physicians in the Bureau. We discussed infection control measures, post-exposure prophylaxis, disease reporting, and our longstanding recommendation that the first MMR be given at 12 months of age. Our next and most intense level of response was to use the IIS to generate a list of all the children in Borough Park, 12 to 48 months of age, who had an immunization, more than a birth dose, but no measles vaccine in our registry. We put together a standard letter and mailed out over 7,000 letters to parents, the letter informed parents about the outbreak and the child's status of not being up to date, at least based on our records, and encouraged them to follow up with their child's provider and encouraged that the children get their MMR dose at 12 months of age. Finally, we generated a list of, We generated a list of children for all the practices in Borough Park, whether or not those children actually lived in the neighborhood, who were 12 to 48 months of age and were missing an MMR, and faxed practices a recall list so that they could work down that list and bring those children in for vaccination. So why Borough Park? There's a large Orthodox Jewish community in Borough Park. There was a great deal of travel between the neighborhood and Israel. Although by traditional measures of coverage, Borough Park was consistent with the rest of the city. We saw no higher proportion of refusal or exemption in Borough Park than in other parts of the city. We had received early on anecdotal reports of a preference for delaying MMR in the community, although not refusing it. And this was notable given the proportion of cases that we had in the 12 to 15 month old age group. So we were interested in looking in that question in greater detail and using our IAS to see what we could find out. This curve, we're looking at a cohort of children born in 2005. So in the year before the outbreak, they were between 24 and 35 months of age. And we're looking at the age at which they received their first MMR dose on the horizontal axis, and on the vertical is the cumulative percent of the cohort who got their MMR at that time. So we see in green and red for the rest of Brooklyn or New York City as a whole that at 12 months of age, somewhere between 45 and 50% of children were getting their first MMR and rapidly leveling off. Now this is coverage in our registry. Our NIS coverage at 19 to 35 months of age is over 90%. So there's some underreporting. But most importantly, when we look at Borough Park alone, we see that only about a third of children receive their MMR dose in that community by 12 months of age, and it takes them much longer to get up to the rest, although they get there. So they're getting their doses, they're actually above at this point, but there's a delay, and this time period, this delay is putting those children at risk. Now, we tried to look at whether our interventions made a difference in terms of when children were getting vaccinated. In this chart, we're looking at the proportion of all MMR doses given to children less than 4 years of age in a given month as a proportion of, as the denominator, and the numerator is those doses that were given to children at 12 to 13 months of age. So if we consider a dose between 12 and 13 months of age as on time, this is the percentage of on time doses, and then looking at each month, all the MMR doses that were given in that month by different groups. So again, in the rest of Brooklyn and all of New York City, about 60% of the MMR doses are given between 12 and 13 months of age. But in Borough Park, it's substantially less. When we look at the period before the outbreak and average it, about 39% of children in Borough Park were, or 39% of the MMR doses were being given within that 12 to 13 month period. After the outbreak, we do see some increase to 45%. Now this could be more better on-time vaccination, or this could simply represent better reporting. Now there's limitations to immunization information systems. There's incomplete reporting of immunizations. There's duplicate records and unmerged records that can create challenges. You're unable to identify who moves out of the area. So some of the children that we were identifying for providers as needing to be recalled, they said this child's no longer part of their practice. There's also missing information on children who may have moved into the area if past immunization records aren't entered into the registry. And then keeping address data current is also incredibly challenging. About 1,000 of the 7,000 plus letters that we sent out were returned to us as not valid addresses. So our conclusions, the risk of measles remains high in New York City and throughout the US due to imported disease. A quality IIS can provide important tools for outbreak response and for understanding areas of increased risk of transmission. Children 12 to 15 months of age who are not yet immunized are at considerable risk during an outbreak. And in addition to getting vaccinated on time matters, particularly in an outbreak situation. By way of recommendations, New York City recommends, and this has been a consistent recommendation for us for quite some time, that the first dose of MMR be given at 12 months of age. We feel that ACIP should review its recommendation with respect to the first dose of MMR being given at 12 to 15 months of age in light of the events in New York City in 2008. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge the many people who helped us both within the Bureau, within the Health Department and CDC in responding to this outbreak. Thank you very much.
Thank you for those excellent presentations. What tremendous response efforts. These presentations are now open for questions.
I had a question. In Arizona, when you did the mass immunization clinic, did you use volunteers? In New York, we have what's called a Medical Reserve Corps, and I just wondered if you guys had asked for something like that.
Yes, Pima County did use the Medical Reserve Corps, students from the university who have been trained in emergency preparedness, a whole slew of volunteers from around the state, from other health departments, et cetera. We're talking about hundreds upon hundreds of volunteers.
Hi, Chris, Greg Armstrong from CDC. You know, during outbreaks like this, there's always a debate as to how much community response or community immunization, or how much efforts we should be focusing on community immunization versus more focused efforts on contacts. And this actually seems like quite a nice compromise. It seems that the intervention that you have is going to have a lasting impact. And given that we're likely to continue to see a lot of importations from Israel and Europe in the next few years, it seems like this is the sort of intervention that's going to yield a lot of returns in the future. But the question is this, of the 7,300 kids you contacted, or I guess it was about 1,000 fewer than that, were you able to follow them up in the IIS to see how many of them got immunized?
We haven't done that at this point. I think that would be a really good thing to look at in terms of another way of looking at, you know, the success or not of this endeavor. I think that's a good point. You know, I think it'll be also interesting just looking at the distribution in a time period afterwards of whether that sort of S-shaped curve shifts in Borough Park. But I think you know, this is going to have to be an ongoing effort in terms of addressing the concerns that the community has about MMR and trying to improve the timing.
Anecdotally, had you heard why they were choosing to delay immunization?
The story that I got was, you know, why don't we wait till they're a little older? the sense I had talking to one provider was, you know, somewhat the autism thing and, oh, it's the age, wait till they're a little older and then it's okay. That was sort of one of the stories that I heard, the one that sticks in my mind.
I'm Dennis King from New York City Bureau of Immunization. Patty, I wanted to ask you, you made reference to the relationship between politics and public health. I wonder if you could expand a little bit about how the decision-making process that you went through in arriving at mass vaccination as opposed to other interventions.
That was mainly a local health department decision. They were totally responsible for the entire response with our support at the state level. I know that they worked very closely with us and the CDC as well. Outside of not being totally involved in all of their decision-making processes, it was really, I believe, a decision made by the top people at the health department saying there is this political pressure and we really need to do something. So that they knew that that was maybe not the most desirable path to go down, but that it was seen as something that needed to be done. As well as they were very concerned about really trying with all these huge amounts of exposures that we're talking about. They were just really having a hard time trying to target their activities.
Hi, my name is Glenda Henry. I'm a public health nurse with the Nassau County Department of Health on Long Island in New York, where we receive lots of inquiries from parents who've chosen to have their children vaccinated for measles, mumps, and rubella separately and are now finding that those vaccines are not available. You know, the follow-up vaccines are not available. And, you know, they're really upset because they can't seem to get them, at least not very much in Nassau County, and they don't want to have their children immunized with an MMR. And so I just wanted to ask, you know, what the implications are of, you know, having another measles or another rubella or another mumps, you know, in combination when they've already had part of it. And, you know, the parents are just, you know, they're outraged and they want to know why the manufacturer is not making it separately anymore. And, you know, what do you think a good response would be to these parents who feel like, you know, it's already an issue, you know, in terms of over-vaccinating their children?
Oh, like that one.
Our comment when that comes up is, you know, MMR is what we have and it's what we're offering, and that the child should get vaccinated with all three, and that there's not an issue. I mean, so we really try to discourage that getting separate vaccinations, and it's actually getting easier to discourage because the access isn't there. It just isn't an option.
Warner, Jane C. with CDC. There are Q&As on the CDC website specifically about this. There aren't monovalent vaccines available now, and there likely won't be in the future, and so it's not dangerous to get an extra dose if parents have had, you know, so there are specific questions you can look at.
Mark Papagna from the Division of Viral Diseases at CDC. Thank you both for two excellent presentations. Mr. Zimmerman, I was really impressed with the presentation, the epi curve with the different clusters. I don't know if that slide can be pulled up again. It was, it really helped to I think represent what was going on, but the clusters somewhat overlapped, and I was wondering how you broke them into clusters. Did you have different genotypes for the different clusters? I see with the second cluster, you've got new importations, so that kind of distinguishes it from the first cluster. But what separates the third cluster from the second?
So we couldn't find any links. I mean, it was a different part of Brooklyn. Could there be links that we missed? Absolutely. I don't want to say that this is a separate outbreak. I mean, one can clearly say that, you know, we had more disease in 2008 and we had an outbreak overall. Did we have, you know, I agree. I think cluster one and cluster two, based on the travelers, we can distinguish. we really sort of pushed about connections between the cases in cluster 3 and cluster 2, couldn't find anything. It sort of confuses things rather than adds clarity, but it was the level of complexity. This gentleman here flew in from Israel, actually attended a wedding in upstate New York, and luckily we didn't have to deal with those contacts, and then arrived in this neighborhood the same week that these children became sick. So he wasn't the source. There's a lot of travel back and forth in Israel. Could they be linked? Perhaps. I saw them because of the difference geographically and somewhat in time as them being separate, but I'm not suggesting anything more than that.
Are there any differences in the genotypes?
No, it would be very nice. I give Jennifer Rota in the laboratory a hard time because I've worked in polio, and polio genotyping, you can look at fine gradations. As I said, these were all D4s, and that's sort of what's circulating in Europe and Israel. So the molecular epi really doesn't provide us any insight. It would be lovely if we could.
Thank you for this discussion and for these presentations. I have a few housekeeping announcements to make. Tonight at 6 p.m., the conference planners are pleased to invite you to participate in the West Coast Swing Fitness event. Join us in Dallas Ballroom A. Please plan to arrive 15 minutes early to sign waiver forms. Exactly. Please stop by the conference registration desk to request a receipt for your conference registration fee. Receipts will also be available for printing on the internet after the conference. The next session will begin at 4 p.m. this afternoon. Please refer to page 29 of your agenda book for descriptions and locations of available sessions. The next hour of the conference has been set aside for poster and exhibit viewing. We invite you to visit the exhibits and posters after I finish these announcements. The conference planners have asked me to make you aware that light refreshments are now available in the exhibit area. Thank you and enjoy the rest of the conference.